Tuesday, January 27, 2026. I want you to mentally circle this date. Or, you know, actually pull out your phone right now and just put a star on it. Because we are going to be looking back at this day for a long, long time.
It really is one of those watershed moments. You know, usually we get a tech news cycle that's just, well, it's noise. New phone color, slightly faster chip.
Right, maybe a scandal or two.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But today, the entire tectonic plate structure of Silicon Valley didn't just shift. It snapped.
It feels like it. I've been reading through the reports from Tekken Game Podium all morning, and I'm just trying to wrap my head around the sheer volume of it all. The historical comparison everyone keeps making is that 1997 Microsoft-Apple deal.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, looking at the numbers here, that feels almost quaint, like comparing a small skirmish to a world war.
It does. The scale is completely different. In 97, it was about saving Apple from bankruptcy. Today, we are looking at trillions of dollars at play, a fundamental reshuffling of who owns the internet, who owns the AI in your pocket, and I am not kidding, a serious funded plan to move the internet into outer space.
And that's before we even get to the consumer tech that dropped, which includes a phone that basically defies physics.
Physics took a bit of a beating today, too.
So here's our mission for this deep dive. We have this massive stack of executive alliances, leak specs, and global launch chaos. We need to parse through the hype and figure out exactly how this impacts you. Because if these reports are right, the way you use the internet is about to change.
And if you look closely at these seemingly separate headlines, you start to see a pattern. It's not random. We are witnessing the start of a new tech Cold War.
A Cold War. That is a heavy term, so let's unpack that, because the opening shot was fired last night, and it involved the two companies that define our digital lives.
The new monolith.
Google and Apple. Now, set the scene for us. It's 9 p.m. Pacific. Everyone's expecting a pretty standard Google keynote.
Right. Sundar Pichai is on stage talking about Gemini 3.0,
mm-hmm.
and then the unthinkable happens.
Tim Cook walks out.
And you have to understand the body language here. Usually these things are so choreographed, so stiff. But the sources say the room just went dead silent. It's like seeing the Joker show up at Batman's birthday party.
It's just jarring. Apple's entire brand is built on we do it ourselves, vertical integration. They own the hardware, the software, the services. So why, in 2026, does Tim Cook walk onto a Google stage?
The press release calls it a collaboration.
Yeah.
Engineers I've spoken to, they call it a surrender.
A surrender. That sounds harsh for a company like Apple. They have so much cash.
It is harsh, but look at the trajectory. Remember Ajax? The whole Apple GPT project we tracked through 2024 and 2025?
Yeah, that was supposed to be the Siri killer, the big internal project to put them back on top.
It hit a wall? The internal postmortems basically say Apple's engineers just couldn't match the speed of model training that Google was achieving. They were data starved. So Tim Cook had a choice. Spend another $50 billion trying to catch up and stay 3 years behind, or you swallow your pride.
And he chose the partnership. The terms of this deal are just staggering.
They really are. It's a 10-year agreement. And the estimates are hovering around $20 billion annually.
$20 billion a year. That's the GDP of a small country.
It is. But the money isn't even the most interesting part. It's what Google gets in return. They're not just the default search engine anymore. They are getting deep system-level access to the iOS ecosystem.
Okay, pause there. System-level access. As an iPhone user, that phrase makes a little alarm bell go off in my head. Apple sells itself on privacy.
What happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone.
Exactly. So if Google is in the system, what does that actually look like for my data?
That's the friction point. And to make this work, they've architected something they're calling the hybrid masterpiece. It's a sort of split-brain approach to AI.
How did that work?
Okay, imagine two buckets. Bucket one is local. The new iPhone 18, which we now know is coming, is shipping with an A20 Bionic chip. This chip has a neural engine built specifically to run Gemini 3 Nano.
Nano. So small, efficient.
Exactly. It lives entirely on your phone. No cloud connection. This handles your private data, summarizing your emails, sorting your photos, all that happens instantly on device. Apple keeps its privacy promise there.
Okay, so that's the Apple bucket. Safe, local. Where does Google come in?
That's bucket two, the heavy lifting. Let's say you ask your phone to generate a 4K video from a text prompt or write a complex block of code. The A20 chip can't do that without melting.
Right, it's a phone, not a supercomputer.
So Siri seamlessly hands that request off to Google's cloud servers running Gemini 3 Ultra.
And the user doesn't even notice.
It's invisible. The phone basically acts as a triage nurse. It decides, I can handle this, or I need to call the specialist. and Google claims they've optimized this with their new TPU V6 chips.
What's different about the V6?
It's all about interconnect speed. TPU stands for a tensor processing unit. The V6 focuses on latency, the lag. They're claiming a 40% reduction, so sending data to the cloud and back should feel as instant as doing it on the phone.
So from a user experience, it's magic. But from a market perspective, isn't this a monopoly?
Market certainly thinks so. Apple stock jumped 5%, Google soared 8%. Investors love it because you're merging Android and iOS at the AI layer. You're creating a user base of 2 billion premium customers that no one else can touch.
Which is great for shareholders, but sounds terrifying for everyone else.
It's an existential threat. If you're Microsoft or OpenAI or Meta, you just woke up to find the doors locked to the most valuable real estate on the planet.
Which brings us to the reaction, because you don't just let Google and Apple run away with the world.
No. And this is where that tech Cold War analogy really works. In geopolitics, when a superpower forms, the other nations band together.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
And this morning, we found out who the resistance is. Microsoft and Meta.
Talk about strange bedfellows.
Incredibly strange. I mean, 5 years ago, these companies were at each other's throats over the metaverse. But leaks confirm that right after the Apple-Google news dropped, Satya Nadella and Mark Zuckerberg held a classified 3-hour emergency meeting.
To panic.
To strategize survival. You have to understand Microsoft's position. They were the AI leaders with OpenAI. But they have a fatal flaw.
They don't have a phone.
Zero mobile footprint. They're trapped on the PC. Apple just shut them out. They can't get their AI into users' pockets unless people download an app, and native integration always wins.
So they turn to Zuckerberg. But what does Meta bring to the table?
Meta has Llama.
The open source model.
Yes. And this is the pivot. It's a classic strategy. Microsoft, the company of closed proprietary software, is now weaponizing open source. The rumor is they plan to integrate Meta's Llama 4 model directly into Windows 12 Copilot.
And give it away.
Deeply and freely. Nadella knows the only way to fight a monopoly like Apple Google is to flood the market with a free, open alternative that's just as good. They're trying to make paying for AI feel obsolete.
That is a fascinating dynamic. So if we zoom out, the map of the tech world has just completely split in two.
It has. You have the closed commercial access, Google and Apple. It's polished, it's integrated, and you pay for it. And on the other side, you have the open universal access, Meta and Microsoft. It's open source, it's messy, and it's trying to be the democratization of AI.
You're either team closed or team open.
Precisely. And while these giants are fighting over software on the ground, there's another player who looked at this and said, "You guys are thinking too small. You're still thinking about Earth."
Enter Elon Musk.
Always. You can't have a tech crisis without him.
So while Cook and Pichai were shaking hands, Musk was holding an emergency Starlink conference. And he opened with a quote that sounds like a movie tagline. AI is eating the Earth.
It's dramatic, but he's pointing to a very real problem. Electricity.
Right. Data centers are power hungry.
Hungry is an understatement. They're vampires. The training for models like Gemini 3 Ultra requires gigawatts of power. Musk is predicting a global electricity shortage by 2028. He's arguing that the power grids on Earth physically cannot handle this.
So what's his solution?
He's proposing Project Star Server.
Which is?
He wants to use Starship to launch entire data centers into low Earth orbit.
Okay. Putting the internet in space. My immediate reaction is, why? It sounds incredibly expensive. Is this just a stunt?
I was skeptical, too. But when you look at the physics of it, it's actually disturbingly rational.
Walk me through it.
Okay, think about the two biggest costs for a data center, energy and cooling. On Earth, solar power is inefficient. You have night, clouds, atmosphere. In the right orbit in space, the sun never sets. You get 24/7 direct sunlight. He's talking about generating terawatts of clean power without touching the grid.
Okay, infinite energy. What about cooling? That uses tons of water on Earth.
Exactly. It's a huge environmental problem. The space is, what, 3 Kelvin? Near absolute zero. You don't need water. You just use thermal radiators to bleed heat out into the vacuum. You cool the servers for free.
That actually makes sense. But what about latency? If my data is floating 500 kilometers up, isn't it going to be slow?
That's the intuition, but physics gives us a break here. On Earth, internet traffic travels through glass fiber optic cables. Glass is dense. It slows light down by about 31% compared to a vacuum.
I didn't realize it was that much.
It's significant. Yeah. In space, light travels at, well, the speed of light. Musk is using third generation optical intersatellite links. Lasers, basically.
Lasers in space.
Yes. So a signal going from London to New York via Star Server travels through a vacuum. Even with the hop up and down, it can theoretically arrive faster than the signal going through the glass cable on the ocean floor.
So it's faster, cleaner, and has infinite power. What's the catch?
Space debris. The Kessler syndrome.
Ah, right. The gravity movie scenario.
You're putting a multi-billion dollar infrastructure in a shooting gallery. Micrometeoroids, old satellite parts. One piece of junk the size of a screw hits your server at 17,000 miles per hour, and your data center is confetti.
But if anyone's going to bet the house on it, it's Musk.
He's betting he can launch them faster than space junk can destroy them.
Okay, so we've got AI monopolies on the ground and server farms in the sky. It feels like we're living in a sci-fi novel, but I want to bring it down to what we can actually hold in our hands. Because there were some actual gadget releases today that fit right into this.
Yeah, the hardware is trying to keep up with the software.
Let's talk about the Samsung Galaxy Z Flip 7, the Olympic edition.
Right, for the Milan Cortina Winter Olympics.
Now, I've had a foldable, and the one rule is you do not unfold it in the freezing cold. The screen gets brittle. It cracks.
It's been the Achilles heel of foldables.
Yeah.
But that's the engineering flex here. They've solved the cold crack problem.
How?
A new polymer compound on the ultra-thin glass. It retains elasticity even at minus 30 degrees Celsius.
Minus 30, so you can flip it open on a ski lift.
That's the idea. And they've paired it with a chassis made of grade 5 titanium.
Aerospace grade.
It's designed to take a beating. If a snowboarder wipes out with this in their pocket, the phone will be fine.
Chuckles. Good to know. But I can't buy one, can I?
Nope, only 12,000 units. Exclusively for the athletes.
Man.
Although I did check eBay, pre-orders are already bidding over $5,000.
Of course they are. But for those of us without $5,000, there was another phone that might be more important.
The Nothing Phone 4A Pro.
This one caught my eye. Nothing is really trying to disrupt that mid-range market.
They are. And this connects to our democratization theme.
Yeah.
The specs are aggressive for a $400 or $500 phone.
Right. Usually at that price, you get a plastic back and a slow camera.
Not this time. They're bringing pro specs down. The glyph interface on the back, it's full RGB now. But the real story is the custom MediaTek chip.
MediaTek, who used to be seen as the budget option.
That reputation is outdated. They built a custom chip for this, the Dimensity 8400 Ultra. The benchmarks are trading blows with the Snapdragon 8 Gen 3, which was a flagship chip, but at half the cost.
That's huge. And I saw the charging speed, 120 watts.
0 to 100% in 15 minutes.
Then that just changes how you use a phone. You don't charge overnight. You just plug it in while you shower.
Exactly. And it forces the big players, like that Apple-Google monolith, to compete on value, not just lock in.
Okay, one last thing. We have to talk gaming. Because while the business world was hyperventilating, the anime community was having its own meltdown.
The Seven Deadly Sins,
yeah.
Origin.
A huge release from Netmarble.
Massive. And the tech behind this is a leading indicator for the metaverse. It's running on Unreal Engine 5.
On mobile! That was supposed to be impossible.
And it's fully open world. A huge shift from the old turn-based mobile games. You can fly, dive underwater. The visual fidelity is so high, you can't tell the difference between gameplay and the anime cutscenes.
That's always been the dream. Play the anime.
Yeah, it's cross-platform. Play on your mobile, come home, fire up your PS5, and pick up right where you left off.
So how was the launch?
A total disaster.
Classic.
In the best way. Demand was so high that servers in Asia and North America just melted down.
Suffering from success.
Pretty much. But it proves the appetite for these high-fidelity experiences is insatiable.
So let's pull this all together. What a day. We started with Google and Apple merging into a two-headed giant. We saw Microsoft and Meta forming a resistance. We've got Elon Musk trying to beam the internet from space.
It's overwhelming, but the theme here is convergence. Hardware is merging with software. Earth is merging with space. Mobile is merging with console.
And the old boundaries are just gone.
That's the takeaway. We are seeing the world split into two super alliances, the Google-Apple axis and the Microsoft-Meta axis.
So in this new binary digital world, here's the question I want to leave you with. As these ecosystems get larger and more intelligent, do you actually own your data anymore? Or are you just picking which superpower gets the privilege of training their AI on your life?
That is the trillion-dollar question. And I don't think we're going to like the answer.